So this morning, we're going to return to our study of Paul's letter to the Ephesians. We've been away from this book for a while, a few months. And because it is summer, because of all the activities that are going on, I think that's why we kind of took a detour from our study of Ephesians. Well, we're on the last chapter, so we're going to be done this within the next month or so. This is the 34th, or I'm going to make it 36th, 36th sermon on the book of Ephesians. That's 36 weeks. How many months is that? Not a lot of math wizards here. 36? 9? 9? 8? 36 weeks divided by 4. Okay. 9 months in the book of Ephesians. I hope we learned something. Who here has learned something? Another 36 weeks. I hope you learned something. I've learned a lot, especially in the last part when we got into the practical applications of the of Paul in the Ephesians. Well, if you can recall, we finished chapter 5 the last time we were here. We talked about husbands and wives and marriage. Okay, today we're going to start. Well, we're going to begin the end of Ephesians talking about children and parents. Okay, any children here? You're all children. Come on. If your parents are still alive, you're a child. You're somebody's child, right? You didn't just come out here from nothing. any parents? I know there's a lot of parents. I can see a lot of parents in here. So we're going to be talking about that this morning from those verses that we just read. And for those of you just joining us and haven't been, this is like your first sermon on the book of Ephesians. All the sermons, well, almost all of the sermons in Ephesians is on our website and on our podcast. So if you want to listen to some of those sermons, you are free to, they're free for you to listen to in our website and podcast. So I'm not going to do any review from last time. You're not going to remember it anyway. I don't even remember it, no. So we're just going to go straight to the text. If you want to listen to the sermon before this, go to the website, go to the podcast. So once again, let me read Ephesians 6, 1-4. And for those of you, again, if this is your first time with this kind of delivery, this kind of sermons, what we do, what I do is I read the verse, I observe it, I tell you what my observations are, and then we interpret it, and then we apply it. It's not going to be that clean, okay? We're just going to go through it, but those are the points that I'm going to go through. I observe, interpret, apply, and hopefully you guys can follow through in your text. Okay, so 1-4, once again, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So once again, after Paul exhorts husbands and wives, he's going through the whole family here, right? Husbands first, wives first, and their marriage. After he exhorts them, we come to the next members of the family unit, and namely, they are the children. So first thing I want you to notice from verse 1, it says, children, that's it. That's the first thing I want you to notice. Children. Okay? Children. When you look at that, the original Greek word used that for the word children is the word technon. Okay? The word technon. And he's not just, okay, Paul is not just referring to younger human beings. That's what we equate children to, right? Younger human beings, those little things that run around and just makes a mess everywhere, okay? In part, that's what Paul is talking to about here. But for us, I don't want you to look at that and say, oh, this is just for the kids. No. This is for everybody born of a woman. Okay? If you still have parents and they're still alive, you're somebody's child. So this still applies to you. Okay, so don't sit there, I'm 80. My mother is 100. You're still a child. You're still somebody's child. So don't take it as, oh, I don't want to listen to this because this is for younger human beings. No. I don't care if you're 80 years old, just like what I said. If your parents are still alive, you are still considered children. And these verses still apply. Although not the same way, but they still apply. I don't want any of us to read the exhortation of the Apostle Paul on children and think it doesn't apply to us anymore since we're adults. Okay, what's the adult age in Canada? 19? 18. 18-year-olds, you're still children. And especially at this time, I think the maturity level of people right now are so slow. Like 18 is equivalent to like 12 in my day. No, I'm serious. There's a lot of 18-year-olds who act like 10-year-olds. Okay? But that's not the sermon for today. I don't want to get going on that and then lose track of the whole sermon. I don't want you to read this and just think, oh no, this applies to younger kids. It applies to us even though we are still adults. Listen, good godly parents have a special kind of wisdom that comes from experience that we can still learn from. So yes, your father doesn't know how to operate a computer. They don't know how to, you know, look through websites. You're not going to learn that from them anymore. That's beyond them. But they still have a wisdom that they have coming from experience that we can learn from. So don't think that since you're now of age that you don't need to listen to your parents anymore. Okay. Again, I just said 18. I'm talking about 50-year-olds. 50-year-olds. Don't think that you know everything. Most of us don't. That's why your parents are still there, still guiding you. You can still learn from them, right? And at the same time, the application here, when it says obey your parents and honor them, especially for those of us older children, differs from the younger children, okay? It differs. Older children, when it says honor your father and your mother, it doesn't mean obey them per se, but take care of them. Right? I mean, a Filipino culture, it's a given, right? We don't put our parents in homes. But here's the thing, and this is what saddens me. A few years ago, we went out distributing food to the homeless downtown Toronto. So mostly we see homeless people, you know, they're sitting there and you give it to them. You give them food, you give them whatever. And then there was this one lady with her suitcase. And from afar, she didn't look like she was Filipino. But the closer I get, she was a Filipino. Filipina. The Lola. I think she was 60, almost mid-60s, I think, at that time. We gave her a sandwich, and we're like, what are you doing out here? Nanay, what are you doing out here? And she's like, oh, well, my son, he sponsored me to come to take care of his kids. But his kids are all grown up, so he just kicked me out. I can't remember. That was like a long time ago. I still can't forget it. Because how is that honoring your mother, honoring your father? And I see it in the younger kids nowadays. The way they talk back to their parents is, unreal. It's unreal. When I was a kid, if I had done that, I would have been go straight to the hospital. Right? Nowadays, parents laugh at it. It's so cute. Their little kids slapping them across the face. Isn't she cute? No, they're not cute. And again, I'm getting off track. I'm sorry, but I just can't stand seeing that. Because these are your parents. And to see that in adults is even more is even more sad, right? Because you should know, you're an adult, you should know that elder people, especially your parents, you should respect them, you should honor them. That doesn't mean that you're of age that you can just do what you want and not honor your parents anymore. So do you listen to them? Maybe not anymore, but you do honor them in that way, you take care of them. But for those of us here, who's asking, what if my parents are idiots? What if I don't have good parents and there are bad parents out there? I've seen people who, they're so, especially when their kids get older, you know, they, especially the guys, right, the fathers, I'm going to take you to be a man. Where do they go? The strip club. Let's go. Be a man. Really? That's how you're going to raise your kids? Should I listen to that parent? Because it says obey, right? So even though, you know, it says here obey. So does that mean obey even though your dad is, you know, an idiot? Even though the father is not a good father? Should you still obey? Should you still listen to them? My answer, when it comes to the listening part, my answer would be no. No, don't listen to them. If they're like that, if they're teaching you to get drunk and go to strip clubs and no, right? Or cheat on your wife or whatever it is that these some of these dads do nowadays. Should you still listen to them? No. But can you learn something from them? Yes. What are you going to learn? Learn from their mistakes. Learn from their mistakes. Watch them how they live. That's not the way I ought to live, especially for Christians. Okay? Learn from their mistakes. And my reason for saying that is not to encourage this disobedience. Okay, I'm not trying to encourage disobedience. But all I'm trying to do is to protect children, okay, especially the younger ones and teenagers, okay, protect you from bad parenting, bad, ungodly parenting. And I think that if you read the next part of the verse, that's what Paul is trying to do, because he gives us two qualifiers in which children are to obey their parents. Two qualifiers. What are these two qualifiers? First one, children, obey your parents in the Lord. That's the first qualifier. Okay, in the Lord. What does that mean? Okay, that's what Paul is encouraging the children, right? Obey your parents. But in obedience, it is not a blind obedience that even if your parents are telling you to do something bad or wrong, that you should still obey. Paul puts in that phrase in there as a qualifier. Obey in the Lord. In the Lord. This phrase in the Lord is also used a few verses before, right? In Paul's exhortation to the wives. What did Paul say to the wives? Right? Submit to your husbands as to the Lord, right? Similar to in the Lord. And I think that both phrases mean the same thing, all right? It means the same thing. It's not Your father or your mother or your husband is not God. Shouldn't treat them as if they are. That everything that they say is right and good. Some are not. There are some bad husbands. There are some bad fathers and bad mothers. That's why Paul puts that in the Lord. Okay, that's why we ought to know the Lord ourselves. Like we can't just depend on anybody else. You can just depend on me. I'm your father in the Lord, kind of say, because I'm the pastor here. But not everything I say will be right all the time, right? Get to know God for yourself as well, right? So Calvin comments, and I quote, besides the law of nature, which is acknowledged by all nations, the obedience of children is enforced by the authority of God. Hence, it follows that parents are to be obeyed, so far only as is consistent with piety or devotion to God, which comes first in order. Because right? If we were just to follow our parents, and we know, especially the teenagers, if your parents are not good and you just keep following them, what kind of parent are you going to be when you have your own kids? Right? You know the saying that says, like father, like son. Right? Why is it like that? Because the father usually teaches the son, and usually the son turns out to be like him. So if your father, and you see your father, and you're a Christian, and your father is, say, non-Christian, and you see him, and he's teaching all these things, but it's wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean that you should obey. Maybe you should tell him that it's wrong. Maybe you should share the gospel to him, right? But Paul, you know, I think Paul's reason here is not just blind obedience. We should obey in the Lord, right? Because think about it. If a child that is not raised in the Lord grows up, okay, and then has kids, hasn't been raised in the Lord, hasn't been changed, hasn't been saved, he's going to start raising children his own way, right? And then, what's that child going to be like? Like his father. And then that child is going to grow up to be a man, have kids, same thing, over and over. It's a cycle. And that cycle needs to be broken. What else can break that cycle? How can you break that cycle? How are parents, how should parents raise their children? What does it mean to raise your children in the Lord? Let's go to Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6, 1 to 8. It says, now this is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it. That you may fear the Lord your God, you and your sons and your sons' sons. You see that? You and your sons' son. It keeps going, right? So from a bad cycle, this is how you break it. And then once you break that bad cycle, it becomes a good cycle, right? Fear the Lord your God. How? By keeping all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, that your days may be long. Keep going. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you in the land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Verse 5. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach, instruct them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. Last verse, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. What are you supposed, how do you break that cycle of bad parenting? Teach your children, instruct your children the fear of God. By what? Teaching them, love God with all your heart, soul, and might. How do you do that, fathers? Okay, I'm talking to fathers because you're the one here that is mentioned in our text in Ephesians 6. How do you do that if you don't know God yourself? All you know is how you were raised and how you were came up and how you... How do you do that? You can't. So that means that cycle of bad parenting will continue. What I'm saying here is, and what I think Paul is saying in Ephesians 6, is that parents, when you're in this cycle, whether your parents did not raise you in the Lord, or whether you are parents who were raised in the Lord, either, you know, where you're in this situation where you either have to break a cycle and start a new one, or you're already in that good cycle and have to keep it going, what you have to teach your children is the love of God. Love God with all your heart, soul, and might. Disciple your children this way. Teach them, instruct them in this. Where can this be seen most? Cross of Christ, through the gospel, right? But if you don't know that as fathers, again, you're going to keep going on that cycle. You know, God forbid your children have more children than you do. There's going to be more of you running around. Imagine, because that's what we're doing, right, fathers? Having kids is no joke, right? You're making more of you. That's what you're doing. You're making more of you. That's why I see sometimes with Eli. Where's Eli? He's not here. I see myself in him. I used to be like that. I used to be. But I also see the who I am now, hopefully, I also see some of that. Because you have to teach it to them, right? You have to be that example. You can't just have kids just to have kids. Right? It's not a joke to have kids. Turning them to more and more like you. And listen, loving God, okay, with all your heart, soul, and might, you just don't say that to your kids. Okay, boy, love God. I'm going to go get drunk. But you love God. I'll do what I want, but you love God. No. You got to show it to them. Show them how it's done. Whether you're, it says in Deuteronomy, right? Whether you're at home or you're outside, before they sleep and when they rise up, teach that to them. Let that be the lens in which your children view the world and in which your children will find their identity. Right? Loving God with all their heart, soul, and might through the sharing and knowledge of the gospel. Right? Teach your children that. That's the first qualifier for obeying parents. Right? Paul says, obey your parents, not blindly, in the Lord. Right? At the same time, parents, you got to be in the Lord to be able to teach that. Right? Second qualifier is in the last part of verse 1. First is in the Lord. Second qualifier is, for this is right. For this is right. Simply put, obeying in the Lord is right because it's from the Lord. Obeying in the Lord is right because it's from the Lord. If you truly believe that God is good and that He's for your good, everything that He tells you to do should be right. Right? Right? God's not going to tell you to raise your kids this way so that they will become, you know, lawless and ungodly. No. He's going to tell you to raise them in a way that is right. You know, what's funny is that sometimes parents, and especially with Christian parents, they tend to consult secular parenting books when raising their kids first before going to the Bible. I don't know if they don't understand what the teaching is on the Bible when it comes to parenting, but a lot of parents that I talk to, especially younger parents, oh, I read this book on parenting and I read this book. Okay, yeah, that's good. Bible talks about that too. But we go to like secular books first. And I find that discouraging, first of all, for Christian parents, because it seems like what they're doing is they're affirming, or they're looking for affirmation on the teachings of the Bible by going to secular books. Like the teachings of the Bible have to be affirmed by like a child psychologist or like a doctor first before I believe it. Really? It's backward. I see it backwards. If you look at the teaching outside and it doesn't coincide with the teaching in the scriptures, then you shouldn't believe that teaching. Because this is the truth. Right? This is where you should go first. You don't take this and then affirm it with secular teaching from a child psychologist. It doesn't work. This is the truth. This is where they get their psychology from. Right? I'll show you an example. Okay. One example, okay. New York Times bestseller. The book is called Collapse of Parenting. The Collapse of Parenting is a New York Times bestseller by Dr. Leonard Sachs. Okay, in the book, this is what Dr. Sachs said. Over the past 30 years, a major shift has occurred in American culture. The transfer of authority from parents to children. Oh, and it's so true. Right? You look at that, it's like, yeah, that's so true. Activities with same-age peers now commonly displace family activities. Children today often choose what's for supper. They choose which social media they will engage. They often choose their bedtime and sometimes even their school. True. All true. I see that in the way people parent nowadays. They always ask their kids, what do you want? What do you want? You want that or this? You want to go there? No? Okay, we stay. We stay. Like, really? You're laughing because I know some of you are doing that to your own kids. You don't want to eat that? Oh, it's okay. You don't have to. Let's go to McDo. I do that too. Right? Let's go to McDo because I'm lazy. I don't want to cook. That's why we just go to McDo. I don't know what your other reasons are, but that's me. But that is what is happening. The transfer of authority has gone from parent to child. Now, this book was released back in December 2015, almost 2 years ago. Right? But the main point of the book, when it comes to the authority of parents, okay, that's what he's saying there, right? He's talking about authority being transferred from parents to children. That has been written by Paul 2,000 years ago. So don't look at this and say, oh yeah, that is right. It's like a light bulb all of a sudden turned on. Come on, Christians. Look at our text, okay? Look at our text. From Ephesians 5:22 to Ephesians 6:9, all Paul is talking about is submitting to authority. That's it. Submitting to authority in different aspects of life. When you're at work, in the government, wives submit to a husband. Children submit to parents. So don't go read that book and say, wow, that's a new idea. I'm going to start doing that to my kid. It's right here. If you knew how to read your Bible, let me change that. If you read your Bible, you would know that. You don't give your authority to your kids to let them decide on their own what they want to do. They don't know anything. They don't. I don't care if they're 16, 18. They still don't know. They don't know what it's like to be on your own. They always have a wall to lean on, right? I found that out the first time I moved out. First time I moved out, got married, I moved out. It's just me and Jen, me and my wife. Right? I'm going to go brush my teeth. There's no toothpaste. What the? There should always be toothpaste. Because at home with my parents, there's always toothpaste. There's always toilet paper. Right? I get there, my washroom is empty. Like, what? What's going on? Because we're so used to our parents always being there. Here, you need more money. Here. Some kids right now, they don't even want to get jobs. I got my parents. It's all good. Don't want to leave school. I'm taking another course. Change my mind. Not paying for nothing. Like, really? Again, I'm getting off track. I'm sorry. But the point is, okay, the parents, you don't transfer authority. God gave you authority on your kids for a reason. It's because you should know better. You should know by experience, right? And you're supposed to guide them through, okay? I'm not saying that, you know, you like put a collar on them and put a leash on them so that they don't make mistakes. Yes, they're going to make mistakes, but you're supposed to guide them through it. Not when they make a mistake. Oh, it's good. It's okay. It's all right. You don't have to try hard, right? We're in that age where, you know, people get participation awards. You know what I'm saying? Like, your kid's not really that good, but they get a trophy anyway. I've seen this, like, basketball leagues and soccer leagues, right? Kid can't even kick a ball. Here, you get a trophy. They get rewarded for nothing. So what does the kid do? Does he improve? No, I get the reward anyway. A lot of parents do that. It's okay. Yeah, good. You're such a great singer. Then you listen to them sing. It's like, ugh. No wonder why he doesn't improve. Because the parent just keeps on. Tell them the truth, parents. Exercise your authority. When they're doing something wrong, exercise your authority. You're the parent. And God is giving you that authority. Right? Now listen, I'm not bashing the book. If in fact, I would recommend it. Go get it, that book, okay? The Collapse of Parenting. It talks about what the Bible talks about, maybe in a way that you would understand more. So go get that book, right? I'm not bashing it at all. As a Christian parent, I applaud it for reinforcing the biblical principles of parenting. Again, what I am disappointed in is the fact that Christian parents, especially the younger ones, needed a book like that to wake them up to biblical principles of parenting. That's the only reason why I'm kind of disappointed with that book, because we could just see that in the scriptures if you just read your Bibles. And if we're to raise our children in the Lord, isn't this where we should start? Not on a book of parenting by some psychologist. Anyway, if you read Ephesians 5:22, Paul talks about submitting to authority. It's all about authority. So when Paul says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, first thing that Paul is saying is that children, be subject to the authority of your parents. At the same time, Paul is saying, parents, you have authority over your children. Parents, you shouldn't hand over your authority to your children, especially younger children. Right? I'm talking about 5 years old and below. Don't hand them the authority. Don't tell them, you want to eat this? Oh, you want to eat this? Oh, you want to do this? Oh, you want to... No. Don't do that. You know that that's the most cruel thing you can do to that child? That's the most cruel thing anybody can do to a child, is to let them decide for themselves. You know why? It's like giving a five-year-old keys to your car. That's what it is. You want to drive? Oh, go ahead. Oh, go. I just want to see you happy. Yeah, right. One pastor said that human children are the most needy and defenseless babies in the whole animal kingdom. Do you guys see that? Do you watch nature shows, National Geographic? When zebras or, say, forget zebras, when giraffes are born, you know how high giraffes are, right? Their kids drop 6 feet, boom, hit the ground. Have you seen giraffes giving birth? Right? They drop 6 feet, bang, hit the ground. And then, what does the baby giraffe do? Get up, start to walk, follow his mom. Right? Human babies, you drop them 6 feet, they're dead. Imagine. Just imagine, okay? If human babies were like born out of giraffes, they would die. Because human babies are the most defenseless, right? They don't know how to do anything. Listen, if you've had a baby, you know that there are nurses out there. They're called lactation specialists. What do? They teach your kid how to latch on to the mother so that they can feed. They don't even know how to eat. Babies are that defenseless. And then here comes the parent talking about, what do you want to eat? What do you want to do right now? Do you want to brush your teeth? No? Like, see how cruel that is to let your kid decide for himself or herself what to do? They don't know anything. They don't know anything. It's so cruel to be asking a child what they want to eat and what they want to, where they want to eat or when they want to eat. That's the most cruel thing you can do, right? You should exercise your God-given authority in this very simple activity of eating. This is the first thing that human babies learn what or how to do, is to eat. It's the first thing. It's survival, right? And then you, as a parent, you should teach them what to eat, where to eat, when to eat. It always gets my blood boiling when I see moms, especially moms, chasing around their kids with a spoon. What? Sit them down. Don't you, like mothers, don't you have authority too? Sit them down. And listen, okay? Grandparents. I see a lot of grandparents, yeah. You're the ones who's training this kid to do that. So the mom is like, oh man, what happened to my child? You're the one who's with them the whole day sometimes. Not because it's not your kid anymore, you don't have to discipline them. Right? But some grandparents are like that. Right? So when mom comes home, the kid doesn't want to, you know, doesn't want to eat in his high chair anymore. The grandparents, yeah, it's okay, go. Let's go to the park, you can run around and I'll feed you. No, right? You have authority. Plus, it is the most unloving thing you can do. I know it's just eating, but that's where it starts. Next thing you know, they're going to want to choose their clothes. They're going to want to, you know, hang out with bad friends. What's going to happen then? That's when you're going to exert authority? Too late. Too late. Right? Because that's what's going to happen. They're going to grow up, and if you let them choose all the time, you don't guide them in their choosing. You don't exercise authority, because if you guide them, they're not going to listen. I don't want them to cry. Right? If you let them do that, you're empowering them to be able to choose far more things that could be bad for them once they grow up. And at that time, your authority is going to be meaningless, because you already got them used to no authority coming from you. If you're raising your children now without imposing your authority on them, they will grow up to be adults who will keep ignoring and undermining your authority. And not just yours, some of them undermine the government's. Yeah. Because that's what you're teaching them. Rules? It's okay. Break them all. Authority? It's all right. You don't have to listen to nobody. Oh, yeah? I'm gonna speed on the highway. I'm going to steal from this convenience store. Really? That's where it's headed, right? That's what you're trying to? You don't believe me? Okay, let's go. 2 Timothy 3:1-5. Understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. Okay. Why? For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive. What's that next one? Look at that. Why would that be there if it's not that bad? Look at what went before it. Lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive. Skip the disobedience, ungrateful, unholy. What else? Heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good. What else? Treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Having the appearance of godliness but denying his power. After all of those things, you look right in the middle of the list, is what? Disobedience to parents. We minimize that to a point where, it's okay. They'll grow out of it. It's just a phase. No, it's going to become a pattern. It's not just a phase. It will become a pattern. And sadly, it leads to that. In the last days, that's what people are going to be. Right? That's what you're training your little 5-year-old, cute little 4-year-old to be. If you don't exert your authority. Our job as parents is to raise up children to be ready for adulthood. Now, part of that is raising them up to recognize and submit to the authority that is placed over them. And not just to your authority. I see parents like that. Their kids are behave when they're there. But others, like, let's say DVBS, they're with Sunday school teachers. Oh, they don't care. Run around like there's no authority there. No. Teach them to submit to any authority. Not just your own. Parents who fail to do this, they're raising up adults who are rebellious and resistant to authority. As we all know, adults who do that usually end up in jail. Is that what you want for your kids? Yeah, you think you're being nice to them now. You let them do what they want. You keep doing that, they're going to end up unsubmissive, not submitting to any authority. Right? That's why I said earlier, raising up your kids by giving them authority on the little things like eating is the most cruel thing you can ever do as a parent. Bible says in Proverbs 22:6, train up a child. Come on, say it. Train up a child the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. Right? And I want you to notice there the word should. In the way he should go. Meaning, you're the one who should know where they should go. And you should train them to go that way. You should train them to go that way. Because again, kids, they don't know anything. They don't know where to go. They know where they want to go, but they don't know where they should be going. So if you just leave them to themselves, they'll go where they want. And usually, what they want is bad for them. Right? What they want is bad for them. They don't know where they should go. They're kids. If you really love your child, you will train them, discipline them in the way that they should go, not in the way that they want to go, right? Now, I know some of you are thinking, man, that kind of parenting, that's hard. That means I have to be on my child 24/7. Yeah. Yeah. Especially when they're little kids, right? When they're, I think, 2 or 3 years old. That's 2, 3 to 5. That's when they absorb as much teaching or as much. That's when they learn the most. Okay, so at that age, that's the age when they're cute, that you can talk to them and they're running around. And so that's the age where we tend to like, you know what, let them do whatever they want because they're so cute, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, now it's a trap, right? Next thing you know, they're not so cute anymore when they're, you know, taking your car out without a license. They're not so cute anymore when they're getting tickets. They're not so cute anymore when, right? This is where parenting gets hard. There's going to be lots of tears shed by both the parent and the child. But in the end, I think when you are gone, when you die, your child can stand on his or her own if you raise them this way. And you will be glad you raised them in the way that they should go. Discipline your kids, right? You're preparing them for adulthood, for when you're not here anymore. They should be able to stand on their own, right? Moms, stop doing their laundry. I know some moms, 30-year-old kids, still doing their laundry. No, it's not good. It's not good for them. Stop cleaning their rooms. Let them clean it. Imagine adults can't do laundry. 30-year-old, mother gone, father gone. Can't clean his room, can't do laundry. Can't eat for himself. That's not, you're raising kids to be ready for adulthood. You should raise them that way. And yes, it gets hard. Hebrews 12:11 says this. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant. But later, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Right? We're talking about discipline. Discipline your kids. Discipline your kids. Right? Now, what I want to point out in this one, in this verse, is that discipline is painful rather than pleasant. Painful rather than pleasant. Now, there's two applications to that. I see a lot of parents, their kids running around, creating a ruckus, right? Riot. Especially the younger kids, the toddlers. And I see parents going like this. Hey, stop it. Stop that. That's not good. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. No authority whatsoever. Right? Why? Because they don't want their kids to get startled and cry. Really? Are you serious? I think my dad told me this, and I told this to a couple of young fathers here. It's better that you make them cry now than they make you cry later on. Right? When your kid won't go to school. Or they don't bring their kids on Friday fellowships when they were 9, 10. And then 18, they're rebellious. Bring them to Fridays. No! My kid doesn't want to go too. Because you didn't do your job the first 12 years. Discipline your kids. It is going to be painful. Discipline is painful. Right? It is painful because a parent, okay, as a parent, you are trying to straighten out what is bent when it comes to your child's attitude and understanding so that they can grow up straight. Now, when you read that, the author of Hebrews does not mean we should make all kinds of discipline painful. Or that to discipline a child has to include some kind of pain. That's not what he means by that. Okay. There are some disciplines. Like, I make my son, Caleb, the youngest one, clean the washrooms. That's a discipline, right? Make him do chores. Is it painful that I see him crying? No. There are disciplines that are, or instructions that are not painful for the kid. Now, the pain is based on how the kid reacts to the instruction. Okay? If Caleb says, no, I don't want to clean the washroom, you do it, then it's going to get painful. Right? Because it's either he asserts his authority on me, or I assert my authority on him. Unfortunately, again, a lot of parents, oh, you don't want? I'll clean it for you. Oh, you don't want to eat that? I eat it for you. I give you something else. Right? So the discipline itself, the instruction itself, is not painful. It's when you fight against it that there will be some, if needed, there will be some pain, if needed. Because your parents are trying to straighten you out, are trying to train you to become a good, responsible adult. Right? That's where the pain is. Right? And I think the reason that the author of Hebrews put that in there is for those kids who are disobedient and rebellious. And there are kids who are disobedient and rebellious. more rebellious than other kids. But as a parent, you don't back up out of that. You don't back away from that. You're the parent. You have authority. You exercise your authority, right? And if they need to experience some pain in order for them to listen and obey, then so be it. And so be it. Now, first, let me also clarify what pain means. Okay, I don't mean physically abuse your child. Okay, I don't mean like beat them up till they're senseless, till they're bleeding. That's not what I mean. The pain that's being described here is the pain being experienced by the child who is being disciplined. So really, it's not how you incorporate pain in the way you discipline, but in how the person being disciplined experiences pain. Sometimes it's painful to just take away certain stuff. There is no physical pain involved, right? But you take away their laptops, or they take away their car keys if they're driving already. That's painful to them, right? And sometimes it's just that. But sometimes you need to, you know, get out that belt of correction. Not rod of correction, belt of correction, right? I know a father, I'm not going to mention his name, who even made a paddle for his child. Wooden paddle. That's what he always used to, custom made. Imagine that. Custom made paddle. I would do that. I'm like, wow, you're good. That's good. Custom made paddle for his kid. That's what I'm saying. If you don't assert your authority, it's that struggle of authority. It starts when they start to talk. That's when that struggle starts. That's like 2-3 years old, right? They're going to try to make you do what they want you to do. As parents, you don't back out. You don't back off. I'm the parent. You do what I say, right? That's how it's supposed to be. And sometimes disobedient kids, there's a pain involved, right? There's some pain involved. If you look at the Greek word for pain used here, or chastisement, it is the word paiduo, which means to educate or to train. Sometimes that's how you have to train, right? With pain, the idea is that of strict training or to instruct by training. This word is the root word of pedagogy, which literally means to educate or to tutor or to instruct. So the instruction is painless. There's no pain in that. But if you don't follow, if you don't obey, then sometimes you need to incorporate some. Okay? Some parents are like, no, I just make them stand in the corner. Time out. Some kids love standing in the corner. Seriously, stand in the corner, start drawing on the wall. So that doesn't work. And that's nowhere in the Bible. Train up your child. The corner of correction. No, there's no such thing. Smack them one time, right? Not too hard. And this is the other thing. Don't do it when you're really, really angry. If you're really, really angry at your child, especially the 2-3 years old, 4 years old, that happened to me once with Eli, a year and a half, 18 months old, wouldn't stop tantruming in the car. So I told him, when we get home, you're going to get it. All the way from here to Mississauga, crying. Didn't want to sit with his Lolo. Once I pulled into our parking lot, stopped. Because he knew what's coming, right? Now, as a parent, since he stopped, do I not go through with my word? Who says, no, he stopped already, you shouldn't hit him anymore? Yeah, you should. After that, straight upstairs, pull down his... And listen, if you're going to hit him with like 5 diapers on, it doesn't work. You're not going to feel that. Like, what is that? Take off the diapers, take off the thing. Don't do that again. Right? And just one. But I was really angry, so I kind of, okay? But it was just one. Just pow. He couldn't even cry. It hurt so much. You know that cry? But after that, people keep talking to me about, oh, terrible two. They're going to get worse at 2. He was 18 months. He never got worse at 2. I'm not saying just because of me. I'm saying God's mercy and grace too. But if I didn't do that, and if I let him take authority when it comes to those, and if I didn't follow through with what I said, then maybe, right? Who knows? I'm sure some of you are experiencing this right now. Talk about corner. Don't do that. Instruct them. Sometimes it involves pain, right? Now, some of you are probably asking, why does there need to be pain involved? Can I just keep on instructing? Again, sometimes you have to make your child cry in order for the instruction to take effect. And this is only where your assertion of authority comes in. Continuous instructing without authority, there's a word for it. If you just instruct, no authority. What's the word for that? Nagging. Continuous instruction without authority is just nagging. Right? The more you keep nagging, the more your children won't listen to you because of your lack of authority. When you put instruction and authority together, what you usually get is obedience. But there are some kids who will still fight against that. This is when you find out who's really an authority. So in that case, do you assert your authority? Do you back off and let them assert theirs on you? Because if you do assert your authority, which you should, there will be some pain. You will hurt your child's feelings. For some parents, this is not a display of love. But for those of us who understand what true love is, based on the Bible, this kind of discipline is what yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Right? Now, after you do that to your kids, if you have to, I'm not saying you should all the time, if you have to, talk to them after. Explain to them why, when you're both not crying. Right? Why did they do that? Right? And don't be so proud, especially fathers, don't be so proud to apologize to your kids. Right? Even if you're in the process of correcting them. I just had that experience with Eli a few weeks ago as well. I was teaching how to drive. Okay, because he wants to get his license. I told him, Eli, stay the limit. The speed limit. Stay on the limit. And his response was, how come I don't see you stay on the limit? How come everybody else is going, why do I have to stay the limit? I'm like, all right, okay. When we stopped the car, I just ripped him up. Like, they can hear me from outside. I was yelling my brain out. Was he listening? No, because I did it while I was still angry. Once I calmed down, that's when he got my point. Right? But afterwards, at night, when we got home, I went into his room. I said, you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. I'm sorry I yelled at you. You have to say that. As a father, you have to say it. I know it's sometimes, I'm not going to apologize. I'm the dad. That's too much authority. Right? If you did that, something wrong like that, and I think it's wrong to do that, I could have explained it in a proper way, then I think you should apologize. And fathers, you should. It'll get your point across even more. But it takes, again, a lot of humility, a lot of pride swallowing. But you do that for your kids, right? You do that so that they get it. They actually get it. They don't just harbor anger against you because all you do is yell. So, where am I? So those two qualifiers, those are the two best gifts that you can give to your child. Discipline them in the ways of the Lord and know that that way is good, right? What I want you to notice too in the last, I got 10 more minutes, is the way we honor our father and mother is through the obedience that we give them. Okay, let's read our text again. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then it says, honor your father and your mother. So the obedience and the honoring has some kind of relationship, right? I think is that the way you honor them as children is if you obey them. If you obey them. This is how we should read this text. We should not separate obedience mentioned in verse 1 to honor mentioned in verse 2. I think that in order for you as a child to honor your father and mother is to be obedient to them. And for a father and mother to be worth honoring is for them to parent their children in the Lord, for this is right. You see that? See how it works? Okay? You honor your father and your mother by obeying. And the way your father and mother deserves the honor that you give them is by raising you up in the Lord. Do you guys see that? So if one thing doesn't fit, like if your father and mother are not raising you up in the Lord, then how can you honor them? At the same time, if you're not obeying godly fathers and mothers, it's not honoring them as well. So I think that the relationship is that obedience is how you honor your father and mother. And how fathers and mothers and parents become honorable to their children is if they raise them in the Lord, for it is right. Okay, you guys see that? I hope you do. Check it out in your own Bibles. All right, check it out in your own Bibles. Now, the fact that this commandment, or this is the first commandment of the promise, is icing on the cake. Okay, Ephesians 6:2 is an excerpt from Exodus 20. It's part of the Ten Commandments. If you go to the Ten Commandments, you'll see it, right? If you were to look at the Ten Commandments, you'll notice. Can you flash the Ten Commandments in there, Exodus 20? Let me just look at it. Exodus 20. Because I want you guys to see this. I think starting from verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God. Or no. Number one is in verse 3. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall, number two, you shall not make for yourself a carved image. Number three, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Remember the Sabbath. Keep it holy. Then after that, how many is that now? Four? The fifth is honor your father and your mother. And then after that, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't bear false witness, don't covet. Right? The rest. So I think the fourth or the fifth is honor your father and your mother. Right? Honor your father and your mother. If you look at the Ten Commandments closely, you'll notice the first four commandments is about how we ought to relate to God. The last five is how we ought to relate to others. Okay, the last five. So first four, how you relate to God. Last five is how we relate to others. And then in the middle is the honor your father and mother. Right now, some theologians place this command, the honor your father and your mother, in the first half of the commandments. Meaning, when he says honor your father and your mother, it means how we relate to God as a father. Some theologians understand it that way, that this command is relating to God as a father and how we ought to relate to our earthly fathers and mothers the same way we relate to God, meaning fear God, love God, right? Obey his commandments. So some theologians place this in the first half of the Ten Commandments. Other theologians place it in the second half, where our parents are the first people who ought to relate to rightly by honoring them, right? Second half of the commandments is how we relate to others. Some theologians are saying honoring your father and mother belongs in that half because you ought to relate to your father and mother rightly by honoring them. But if we go back to our text in Ephesians and how honoring our parents is seen by how we obey and how honorable parents are seen by how they parent in authority of God's teachings, we can see how being obedient to honorable parents can help raise children who will not commit murder, will not commit adultery, will not steal, will not bear false witness against their neighbors, and will not covet. Do you see that? I think that's why it's right in the middle. So it begins with God, okay? Seeing who God is by faith through our Lord Jesus Christ and loving him, just like what the commandments are saying. And then as God grants authority to parents to govern and manage their children, godly parents become God's image that their children ought to obey and honor. And when you do this as a godly parent, when you disciple your kids in that way, they're going to grow up to be what? God-fearing, God-loving, God-exalting adults who live their adult lives not committing adultery or murder. They are not thieves. They are not gossips. They do not covet. Or we can say that godly parenting, the way Paul describes it for us in Ephesians 6, is a result or results in godly behavior. That's how I see the Ten Commandments. And that's how I see how the honoring their father and mother fits right in the middle of that. So it has to start with you, parents, right? This is this begins with this discipleship. Okay, if as a parent you are not solidly grounded on scriptures, you will raise up kids just like you, especially fathers, just like you. Imagine that. It begins with discipleship. It begins with you being a disciple of Christ, and it begins by you discipling your kids to be the same. Listen, children are all born sinners. They're with a sinful nature. And it's funny how Obama, you know how Obama, after the Charlottesville incident, Obama tweeted something, and he quoted Nelson Mandela on a tweet. And this tweet, some saying, this tweet is the most liked tweet in the history of tweeting. It is so liked. After the Charlottetown situation, Obama tweeted this: "No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite." Most liked tweet ever. Is it true? Biblically? No. This is from Nelson Mandela. Right? And at its core, it goes totally against what the Bible says about human nature. Human nature, Bible says, describes it in Romans 8:7. It says, "For the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God, for it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot." What is God's law? God's law is that of love, right? So, is Mandela right? That love comes naturally to us, that we have to learn how to hate? It's backwards. You already know. You don't need to learn how to hate. You know it in your bones. You don't need to be taught how to hate. You see it in your kids. Kids don't need to be taught how to hate. Kids don't need to be taught how to be selfish. They just know it. That's natural to us. So when Mandela says that love comes naturally to the human heart, it's totally untrue. We're born haters. Haters of God, haters of others. We are by nature wired to hate. We don't need to learn to hate. We know it by heart. What we need to do is be taught how to love. And for us to learn, our hearts need to be changed. A miracle has to happen in our lives that will renew our hearts and our minds so that instead of hatred coming naturally, love comes naturally. This happens by having the eyes of our hearts open to see the glory of Christ through the gospel by faith. And when this happens, we begin to see things the way Christ sees them. Right? Now, where does this whole process begin? By hearing the gospel. Where should you first hear the gospel? At home. Godly parents discipling their children in the ways of the Lord. That's where this whole process begins. That's why parenting is so important. That's why it's not a joke. You're just raising up more and more people like you. And lastly, in our text, if you go back to our text, we're going to close. The last verse in our text, verse 4, says what? "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." I'm not going to go through what it means to provoke your children. I think that's self-explanatory. Okay? What I want us to see here is that both parents are given accountability and responsibility for their children, to discipline them, right? But as we have learned from the previous verses, ultimately it is the head of the family whom God will call into account. Fathers, you're the one, okay? When the master comes back, he's not going to ask your wife, "Did you raise up our children? Were you the one responsible?" No. It's always the man. When Adam and Eve sinned, who did God look for first? Adam, even though it was Eve's fault. Adam first. Fathers, this is your job. I see a lot of fathers that are hands off when it comes to their kids. Talk about, "I just provide. You do the rest." Yeah, tell that to God when he comes back. Yeah, seriously. "I provided for my kids. I bought them all the iPads they want. I bought them all the cell phones they want. Not my fault they turned out to be drug addicts." And because it's your job, right? And mothers, don't hinder that. biggest hindrance to a godly father disciplining his kid is the mother. Always, oh, no, don't hurt my son. Mothers, they need that. If you love your kid, just get out of the room. You don't have to listen to it. You don't have to see it. But fathers need to do that. And fathers, you have to do that. It's your job to provide and to protect your wife and your children. Again, in the last day, God is going to call you to give account on how you stewarded the gift that he has given you. Both the gift of marriage, remember, marriage is a gift, and the gift of children. So fathers, do you discipline your children and disciple them in the ways of the Lord? Do you initiate discipline when your kids are not being obedient? Or do you leave it to your wife? Do you discipline your kids the proper way by not provoking them to anger? By not purposefully making them angry? Do you do that? You're the one who's going to give account to all these things come judgment day. And I would think that the only witnesses that God will call up on that day to testify about you is your own family. If I was to ask your wife or your kids today, how is so-and-so at home? How's your dad at home? Is he the same dad? Is he the same person I see here? You know, always happy and shaking people's hands and, you know. Or is he all grumpy and don't even want to talk to nobody? Because we put on our church clothes, right? I don't know how you guys are at home. That's why I told the elders, when I'm selecting or when I'm appointing elders, I think I want to talk to your wives too. Because I know you in Bible study, yeah. I know you when we have meetings, yeah. I don't know you at home. How are you at home? I always ask my kids that. I always ask my wife that. How am I at home? Am I the same guy at home as I am at church? Hopefully, because if I'm not, tell me. Right? Father, same thing. How are you at home? If I was to ask your kids. Or if I was to ask your wife. What kind of husband are you? What kind of dad are you? Right? Being a husband and a father is a huge responsibility, not only in the eyes of men, but more importantly in the eyes of God. Are you the kind of husband and father that God has called you to be? If not, this is messages for you. Repent. God is merciful and gracious. Call to him for mercy to change you to become that parent that you're supposed to be. Become that father that is like him, right? He's the good father who will always be there to hear your prayers as one of his children. Get to know him more intimately and know him as a father. And with the help of the Holy Spirit, ask him to change you to be the father, to be a father like him to your own children. Right? It's not hopeless, right? I know some of these things probably hitting you right now, but it's not hopeless. Right? It's a wake-up call. At the same time, it's an invitation. Come to God. Ask for his grace. Ask for his mercy. And raise up kids according to the Lord, according to his word, because it is right. Amen? Fathers? I'm not kidding about the elders too, eh? Those elders that I spoke to, I'm going to talk to your wives. Some of them today, some of them next week. Amen. Okay, let's close with a word of prayer.